Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to your Thursday edition of Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris along with Frida Kahlo. Special guest Frida Kahlo is joining us today on the show.
It's just a shirt. Don't make fun of my shirt.
It's a comfortable shirt. Welcome in. For those of you listening to the audio version of it, Natalie's wearing a Frida Kahlo shirt.
It's a comfortable shirt. It's just colorful. And it was a gift from my brother-in-law's sister in Mexico.
Okay, so kind of appropriate.
And although I love it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, welcome in. Welcome, everyone, to the big show. Philip is back. Last night, Philip's on the production side. I don't know. Something crapped out. Literally, a virus scan started running during the show, so Philip was cut off. Silenced. He was redacted.
They didn't want you to explain to us the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, which was something we discussed last night, if you missed it.
Yes, and I'm fully prepared to do so.
I'm ready. We're going to put a pin on that and get back to it. But yeah, last night was a night where a lot of like technical things went wrong in the show, and Clayton and I nearly murdered each other. Right. So tonight,
well, let's just say
how this goes.
It's incredibly freaking frustrating because you literally spend all day writing and note pulling, and the production team is getting all the elements together, and then you've got a computer problem, and it literally, we've got like 80 different computers that are operating together in tandem, and then there's a virus scan on Windows.
Yeah. It was just...
Screw you, Bill Gates.
It was a shit show. And so there was at one point where Clayton asked me to ring in on something, and I just was like giving him dagger eyes. So this is one... Normally, we work just fine together. You know, some people can't work with their spouses. This was one of those things where it was like, if looks could kill.
Right.
So we're all good tonight.
Hey,
I was going to say, not to tell too much behind the scenes, but my favorite was when that was done, Clayton was just like, I couldn't wait for that to be over.
Yeah. Well, I think about David Letterman, my idol in television, who was the reason I got started in television many years ago. And he was famous for like just being so critical of himself. Like after an episode of the show, he would like, he would go up to his office and like throw pencils at the ceiling. And if he had a good show, the best that he would ever say is, well, that'll stick to tape. Like that's the best compliment he would possibly give himself. I'm not that bad, but last night I was like, you know what? Let's put a fork in that one.
Yeah.
All right. So on tonight's show, though, we've got an excellent show lined up for you tonight. We're going to be talking about the massive amount of propaganda that is unfolding in Ukraine. Now we've had a ton of it already, of course, but the past 24 hours, because I think Ukraine is literally on the ropes right now, you're seeing a full court press of propaganda from Western media. We're going to talk about that.
Yes, we are. We're also going to talk about how much the White House is getting involved in this baby food shortage, when they knew what they know, what they were going to do about it, if anything. Also, a new documentary about gender is out, and it experienced a cyber attack in just the first 24 hours, and we're going to take a look at that and whether or not that is intentional censorship or not.
I think we got a DDoS attack, right? Denial of service, DDoS.
So who did?
Who did? Didn't we? I don't know. Maybe that's what happened to us last night. I don't know. I don't know.
That's what I was doing on my end.
You were DDoSing us?
That's right. Yeah, I was trying to. I'm just not very good at it.
Please don't do that. What else we're going to talk about? We're going to talk about Nina Jankowicz. All of these mass shootings that we've been having across the country on a regular basis. Well, Nina Jankowicz, formerly of the Disinformation Governance Board, came out with an amazing interview on NPR, on Fresh Air on NPR, and basically says, hey, if we were allowed to do our thing, if the disinformation board were allowed to function, you wouldn't have these mass shootings in the United States. So Nina Jankowicz, maybe we got to reinstate Nina Jankowicz.
I mean, that is extremely reductive, but okay. And Dr. Anthony Fauci is saying that the reason the Biden administration needs to maintain the mask mandates is to maintain power. So we're going to talk about that. Obviously, we'll have some words.
Yeah. So get any super chats you have now. We'll take super chat breaks throughout the show. Make sure you're subscribed to the channel. If you're new here, please subscribe. We do this show Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. And please, you can join our channel as well just by going to redacted.inc/join. It's not .com, it's .inc. redacted.inc/join is the place to go for that. All right. Without further ado, let's talk about what's unfolding in Ukraine. Big updates overnight from the Russian side and the Ukrainian side and the Western media propaganda piece on all of this. Now, as the Russian army closes in on the city of Severodonetsk, there is a big pile of propaganda being shoved at us from the Western media. Now, we're going to get into the ridiculous Wall Street Journal stories in just a moment. So this is Severodonetsk. It's the Russian army grinding its way to the center of one of the most important cities right now in the Donbas region. And they're dealing with the same shit that they dealt with in Mariupol, which is Ukrainian soldiers hiding or hunkering down in apartment buildings. Now, these apartment buildings aren't empty. They have people that live there. So just like in Mariupol, Russia has to go slowly and methodically to sort out the soldiers from the civilians in this area. Not good. Now, we've heard Western media propaganda saying, hey, see, Russia isn't as big and bad as we thought they were because they're going so slowly. Why are they going so slow? They're an old Soviet army. Well, it turns out, despite Western propaganda, the Russians don't actually want to hurt civilians. And the Azov battalion knows that, so that's why there has not been a blitzkrieg. Now, if you study...
What do you mean by blitzkrieg?
So a blitzkrieg,
not
of course...
Not the Ramones song.
Not the Ramones song, but it is, you know, Germans, of course, famously using a blitzkrieg strategy, sort of like overwhelming force. We're going to take our Panzer division and we're going to shove it right up your ass. And we're going to do it so fast that you won't
I don't want that.
You won't even have... If you have a Panzer comes for your ass, you will not have any time to do anything because it's going to be so fast, it's going to be a blitzkrieg. I don't know. It's the speed okay. It's the speed with which you move, and so it's sort of like shock and awe.
Yeah.
Right. United States has done shock and awe when we did that in Iraq and so forth. So
yes, and this is not anything that anymore is controversial, although it was in the early days of this conflict controversial to say these things on certain platforms. But it's not anymore. Now the Wall Street Journal is showing clearly that these units inside of the Ukrainian army are sort of going into civilian areas, mm-hmm. right? And
the Washington Post also.
Right. So this is front page news now. So this is not anyone can say
disinformation
anything, or, right? Yeah. This is okay. So I just wanted to, because you know how we have to be on this platform.
Yeah. Well, no, and by the way, it was proven demonstrably during the Mariupol takeover. So we know that. So now if you study Russian military history, they don't use the blitzkrieg method. That's just not what Russians do. They don't follow sort of the German blitzkrieg style, right? Well, next we learned today that the United States has already been helping to attack Russia, not only with supplying weapons, but also by waging cyber warfare. Take a look at this front page. U.S. has been supporting Ukraine with offensive cyber operations, a top general reveals. U.S. Army General Paul Nakasone told British media outlet Sky News that we've conducted a series of operations across the full spectrum, offensive, defensive, information operations. He did not specify the target specifically of these operations, but he said, you know, you usually do these things when you're actually at war with a country. Further evidence that the United States is at war with Russia. Like if you were wondering at home at all whether or not
yes.
we were at war with them, but we are. Now, meanwhile, we have CIA analyst Larry Johnson has been cataloging all of the Ukrainian units that have been quitting their jobs and rebelling against their commanders. Now, the number has now doubled in a week, now up to 12 units quitting, saying we're done. And these are just a few examples. The video you're seeing here is just examples of some of these soldiers filming themselves and saying, hey, we're done. We don't have the supplies. We want to go home and spend time with our family because we've been basically sold a bill of goods.
Well, also, remember, a lot of them were forced to stay and fight. Men of fighting age could not leave when this began. You're staying here. You're defending this country, whether you like it or not.
Right.
So many of them may not have been ideologically aligned with the conflict to begin with.
So take a look at this list. This is now up to 12. This is 12 units that have now just basically thrown in the towel. You've got, I mean, this is crazy, right? 13th Battalion of the 58th Motorized Infantry Brigade, the 2nd Company, 3rd Platoon, 115th Brigade, 3rd Platoon of the 115th Brigade. I mean, on and on and on the list goes, right? Again, it was 6 last week. It's now doubled. And Larry's been doing a great job cataloging all of this. This is the 30th Mechanized Brigade, 3rd Battalion. Listen to how they describe why they're quitting. Watch.
9-та рота. Просимо вас прийняти певні міри. Ми відступили зі своїх бойових позицій в зв'язку з тим, що нас не було на місці керівництва. Нас привезли непідготовлених людей, які взагалі не мають військового досвіду на позиції. Сказали лише одне.
Note to self, anytime you surrender,
okay,
put a windscreen on your microphone.
All right. I surrender every day.
30th Mechanized. You'd think the 30th Mechanized would have a windscreen for the microphone.
Yeah.
They don't.
But again, to this point, right, they're like, we're not people who are military trained. And so, you know, our families sort of got themselves to safety. We, us men, could not. We didn't sign up for this, right? And so I think that this is another example about how human borders are just such bullshit, and we're asking people to die for something that they may not even really want to. Like, we're humans. We just want to protect our families and live our lives, not fight for someone else's cause.
Well, we're not even trained, and we're in charge of the mechanized division. Okay. Like, that sounds technical.
Yes.
Right. Here's another one. Here's the 18th Marine Battalion of the 35th Brigade. Listen to their surrender video.
Доброго дня, шановне панство. Ми окремий 18-й батальйон морської піхоти в складі 35-ї бригади. Звертаємося до суспільства за допомогою. Просимо вас вплинути на вище керівництво батальйону бригади.
Yeah, and it goes on and on and on and on and on. That's just another example. That's another example. Here now is the Ukrainian 14th Brigade, 6th Battalion. These are three that I'm going to show you. And they just, you know, again, there's no subtitles on this one, but they're just saying they're basically the same thing. So surrender after surrender. I don't see surrender throwing in the towel, and if they get captured, they get captured. But they're quitting. They're quitting. So all of this would, of course, lead to a huge increase in Western propaganda, as you can imagine, right? Americans and Europeans are suffering at home, so we need some good fake news to get you excited about paying higher gas prices while we spend $40 billion sending weapons to a military that is collapsing before our eyes. And boy, oh boy, the Western press did not disappoint with their propaganda over the past 24 hours. Did you see this? Two amazing pieces of journalism from the Wall Street Journal that I want to highlight right now. The first made me laugh out loud when I saw it. This headline. And then I want to discuss the story with a few. Then I discussed this story with a few sources who also called total bullshit on this story. So this is the Wall Street Journal. Here's the headline. Documents reveal hundreds of Russian troops broke ranks over Ukraine orders. Okay, so instead of covering actual documented quitting of Ukrainian army, which we just showed you here on the show, the Wall Street Journal didn't cover that, and they run a hilarious story based on documents.
Well, now, I wouldn't say hilarious.
Word. Hilarious in the scale of the propaganda. I mean, to me, it's when you start to unpack this and you realize the group that they cite in the article literally is tied to George Soros funded, and you realize
very disingenuous, and it's disappointing because you know, the coverage of this conflict has started to show that that there is strength in I don't know how to say this, so you go ahead.
Okay, good. Well, when it comes to you,
I'm afraid.
One intelligence source we spoke to today says this has all the signs of a classic British MI6 fake documents story. Also, just think about this for a moment. The Wall Street Journal reporter has Russian documents that show troops were quitting. Okay, show us the documents. Print them up. We'd love to see them, right? WikiLeaks is good at doing that. You show us. Better than that, why don't you show us some videos or photos of these soldiers who actually deserted? Instead, they print one photo of one soldier. Even better, the group cited in the article, as I just mentioned, George Soros-funded organization. So again, all of this tied together. There are also many, many more problems with this piece that I don't have time to go into today. But okay, I want you to go read it for yourself. Okay, you read it for yourself and make your own decisions. Now, Just like the Associated Press did a few weeks ago, the Wall Street Journal also, in a separate article today, did a ride-along with Ukrainian security forces. You know how like local news stations will like do ride-alongs with police departments?
They embed, lingo.
Yeah, they embed with the police, you know, like cops, you know. Well, the Wall Street Journal did a ride-along with the Ukrainian security forces. You remember these guys. In an article called Ukraine Security Services Hunt for Russia, Supporters and Agents Hide in Their Midst. The article is really disgusting.
It's actually very disappointing and disingenuous because if you have been in that region at all, you understand that there is a lot of disagreement on what is the right way to be. There are a lot of people who do not like Western forces. There are a lot of people who do not like NATO involvement. And so in this article, the Ukrainian forces go into some dude's house and they look at his tablet and they're like, you've been posting pro-Russian things, you know, they're bombing us. And so you support them, you think this. And so they are literally attacking this person who is doing nothing, right, except ideologically aligned with Russia, which we have reported here. There are many people in Ukraine who just said, I'm going to wait this out. I'm not actually so sure what is better for this region. So I'm going to see, right? This is, and so these forces go into the art in the article, they go in some guy's house, they knock it down and say, oh, look at your tablet. You've been, you know, pro-Russia. That's not allowed. And so the ideology, which is popular in that region of the world, and we saw for ourselves just going to Serbia a few weeks ago, which was very shocking to those of us in the West who feel like we're told everybody hates Putin. That's just not true. There are a lot of people who hold dear to these ideologies. And this is just bullying someone for having that opinion.
Well, you remember the Associated Press piece a few weeks ago, right? The Associated Press piece had, they did a ride along.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know the history of the, you know, the SBU, and we know how brutal they've been, right?
Yeah.
And so the SBU has had a long history of human rights violations. I mean, because remember, the U.S. State Department labeled the SBU violators of human rights. Take a look at the website. This is the State Department of the United States website, okay? This is on their website right now. You can go there right now if you want. I encourage you not to because you're watching this show, but read it later. You can read it for yourself. This is the 2021 report. So last year on the SBU, and these go back many years. You can read them for many, many years.
Right.
You can go back, right? So, and they say significant, look at this, highlighting significant security, unlawful arbitrary killings, including extrajudicial killings of the government or its agents, all cases of cruel and inhumane, degrading treatment or punishment of people. We've highlighted this before on the show, but it's, the last time I showed it to you, I had a website version of it from 2017. This is last year.
Yes.
So then I, as I'm going through this Wall Street Journal article, I cannot find one mention, not one mention.
Of SBU as a undesirable?
Yeah, nothing from the State Department. It would be nice to know, right? Wouldn't it be nice to know, like if the Wall Street Journal is writing an article about the SBU and they're doing a ride-along, that they would mention, this is the same group that the United States actually says are violators of human rights. But there's no mention of it in the Wall Street Journal article.
Right.
I mean, here's how...
But they go right along and violate someone's rights to be in his house and think things about Putin.
This is what you were saying. So here is the article, and here is this guy. They're like hanging out at his house. They slam his door open, right? Here's the article. I'm going to kind of just go through the text here. By the way, so the Wall Street Journal sends a photographer. So they're taking photos as they bust into people's houses. And it says, open up. SBU is here. Look, I'm going to read along in the text here. Bellowed the lead officer clad in body armor with his face covered by a balaclava. Open up, SBU is working here, he said, adding a couple of expletives. As the door lock unturned, the squad rushed in. On the floor now, the commander shouted at Mr. Popoff, who's 59 years old. All clear, yelled another one. You are a Soviet man, right? You must believe the Soviet Union stood for peace, right? An investigator asks Mr. Popoff, who's laying sprawled on the carpet. Yes, he replied. So why are you supporting those people who are shelling our city? I love this propaganda. We've got the Wall Street Journal here with us. So we're going to go on a little ride along. These are the things that we're going to yell out so you can put this in your article. Okay. So wait a minute, and it's all propaganda.
I mean, what is a reporter supposed to do with this? And then they write up the story as, you sure showed that guy.
Yeah, wow. You really,
dude with his tablet in his living room.
You really threw that guy on the ground, that 59-year-old Mr. Popoff. Way to go. In the city of Kharkiv.
Liking his heritage.
Yeah, exactly. Of Russian descent. Has a family from Russia, is an ethnic Russian, and he's supporting Vladimir Putin. Like, no mention of this, or no. I mean, it's unbelievable, this level of coziness that the Wall Street Journal and the Associated Press have with the Ukrainian security services.
Yeah, this is. I mean, I don't know. I'm reading this today, and I'm like, what do they want us to take away from this?
Well, they want us to take away that again, Russia bad. Even though Ukraine is getting their asses handed to them, we need to support sending additional $700 million in weapons, and we need to keep them in the fight.
But this article seems to me like they are actually framing the SBU as bullies. Because, you know, I'm reading this almost like a fiction narrative. I'm like, who are we rooting for here? Because this was just a guy
if they were framing it as they were being bullies, there would be mention that the United States government actually labels them as violators of human rights.
Yeah.
And that we should never send money to these people. This is another thing that Congress has written and into laws, that we are not sending money to violators of human rights. And yet we do.
Yeah.
So there's no mention of this in the Wall Street Journal. So you won't be shocked to learn that the Wall Street Journal failed to mention that. They didn't have any mention of the human rights, angle in this story at all. And then there's another big piece of news that came out today on food shortages. We need to talk about these food shortages story, which has also been played like we've all been played like a fiddle when it comes to the propaganda. To hear the United States explain it, of course, Vladimir Putin. Is in control of the food supplies and the United States doesn't have any food. That's how we're supposed to play it, right? Here's a CNN article that frames it this way. Biden blames Russia's war in Ukraine for food supply shortages and price hikes. We've heard about Putin's price hike. I also love that they show
an emaciated cow. This is like a biblical image from the 7 years famine.
I mean, of all the images, we got an emaciated cow. That's a Putin cow. Apparently, like that's an
Putin did that to that cow.
Putin did. Yeah, Putin.
Speaking Putin's of food cow. Shortages in the chat, they're saying that my shirt just makes them want me to eat chips and salsa.
Right.
So sorry. About
Frida Kahlo. I know. I literally want.
I mean,
can
I
you,
just I
can
keep
you bring some more salsa to the table, please, because
that's a rude comment.
I keep expecting you to like to be on a velvet painting. Just like that's just for some reason, like that's my I'm pretty sure my grandmother had a velvet painting of you in her house wearing that shirt.
It's too bad I tweezed my brows today.
I know, Frida Kahlo. You should have definitely brought some chips and salsa. If you wear that shirt next time, you need to bring tacos.
Okay. I'm sorry. Back to the food shortage.
Yeah. So we're talking about food shortages and we're talking about food. So now you're making me hungry. Anyway, the Western narrative, of course, is that this is all Putin's fault, right? And in fact, if you go right now to the U.S. Embassy's website, this is hilarious graphic. Look at this. This is on the U.S. Embassy's website. War, not sanctions, causes food insecurity. And just look at a couple of the things that are on this list. This is hilarious. My favorite on this graphic is that they blame Putin for bombing empty fields. Do you see that on there? Mm-hmm. The reason that you have food shortages is because Putin is bombing fields, which is hilarious. That's a good use of weapons, right? $1 million weapons is to bomb empty fields to blow up a few grains of wheat.
Okay.
That's ridiculous. But now the Russians are saying, we have your grain. So in an interview yesterday, Sergei Lavrov of Russia says, look, we actually have your grain and we are ready to deliver it. However, port operators are under sanction. While grain itself is exempted, the ports are refusing to work with us because of your sanctions, and they're blocking the grain.
This is like one of those left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing kind
I guess.
Of thing.
That yeah, it's, well, I mean, it makes sense.
People will starve because of it.
And here's what Sergei Lavrov has to say. Here's a quote. I'm quoting him now, and he told journalists last night. Although Western countries keep saying that grain has not been sanctioned, they for some reason fail to mention that the ships that transport Russian grain are in fact under sanctions. European ports do not allow them in. There's no insurance available. And in general, Western sanctions have disrupted the logistical and financial infrastructure that Russia uses to export its own grain, Lavrov told journalists in Moscow. Now, again, that's Sergei Lavrov. He's Russian. You do with it what you want. Well, we report, you decide. We're giving you the information on this story. But I think the Western propaganda.
And the information remains that despite all of the sanctions on the United States' own State Department did show that fuel and agricultural products and food were exempted from sanctions up until now, right? And so there is no evidence that those sanctions would have affected our economy if those things were exempted. That it just does not track. So maybe we're doing things now to make that the case, but up until now, that should not have been the case.
Right.
That explanation doesn't track if you pay close enough attention to what they're actually writing down on paper versus saying from a press platform.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, this whole Putin price hike thing from the beginning hasn't made any sense.
So the more we pay attention, the more we can call that out. But the problem is most people will be like, oh, okay. Well, yeah. There's a war on, and, you know, I think people sort of think, well, we have to adopt this World War II type mentality and we'll ration some sugar and things like that. You know, that's sort of what war is about.
And they're all liars. They are all liars.
You sit on a throne of lies.
That's right, Elf. You do. That's what Western media does. All right, let's take some super chats before we move on. We've got a lot more stories to get to here. Let me see. How do I pull this showrunner? There we go. Show rundown. Anyway.
So we did have one super chat. I can't put them up on screen because I need to get like four more monitors to do all of the stuff I'm trying to do right now. And so I can follow along the script or I can grab super chat. So it was Tessie for the $5 super chat. Had said
when the I can see it
when the Ukrainian army wins. Yeah, go ahead.
When the Ukrainian army.
So when the Ukrainian army wins.
I'm gonna read it. When the Ukrainian army wins so much and smash the Russian lines so badly, they push through to Siberia. Okay.
So get your super chats in. Yes, and we've got a lot more news to get to here on the show on this Thursday night. If you're not subscribed, oh, by the way, can you do us all a favor right now? It's so easy to do, right? All you need to do is use your fingers. It's so easy to do. Just please smash that like button. What happens is while we are live, it pushes us out to more people that need to see this. That's how YouTube's algorithm works. So if you're watching this on YouTube right now, please click that like button. That's how it pushes us out to more people. Rumble, you can also hit the Rumbles and do that. And I'm not sure how Rumble's algorithm works, but I know that that's how it is on YouTube.
But we like the likes.
Yes,
makes
please.
Makes us feel good.
It does.
Keeps us going.
It lets you know, hey, you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
That's, you know, we all need a little encouragement in life, you know? And also, what do you think of Natalie's shirt?
Stop so it with you the can, shirt. You the can, shirt is super cute.
You can weigh in on that as well. Where did you get this, by the way?
My brother-in-law's sister sent it as a gift from Mexico.
It's beautiful.
Yes, it is.
It's like a spring garden.
I mean, it is very on point for being in Portugal. Like it's got that you know classic Spanish like Portuguese style to it. I'm not giving you a hard time. I'm like it's legitimately a fun shirt. It's
a fun shirt.
It's a comfortable shirt.
Yeah.
Okay, if you guys can name that movie reference, It's a comfortable shirt. If you can name that movie reference. Drop it in the chat. Drop it in the chat. Drop it like it's hot. All right.
All right. Let's talk about baby food now, because the White House is not giving us a straight answer as to how long they've been working on the solutions for the baby food shortage that has been going on for several months now. President Biden said Wednesday that he was not aware of the severity of the baby formula shortage until April, which is 2 months after the Abbott Nutrition, the factory, shut down because of recalls of the products. Now, the recalls were due to government action, right? The facility didn't voluntarily shut themselves down.
They found all this bacteria.
The formula was not safe.
Right.
Two babies died. Others were getting sick. And the government got involved, right? But apparently, babies dying is not something that's raised up the food chain.
Imagine 2 months.
To the president.
I mean, think about we're in a major crunch right now, right? And maybe this is where this story this week started floating around about how the president wasn't happy with his staff members.
Perhaps.
This story started floating around Washington, right? And if I were president and people kept this from me, heads would roll. Like, we have a baby food shortage and literally we can't get enough people to get enough food to moms right now during a huge inflationary period, during when we were literally funneling money to Ukraine because we, you know, in a proxy war, and now moms can't get baby formula. Heads would roll, right? So Jean-Pierre, she is the new White House press secretary, took over for Jen Psaki. Reporters from all walks of life asked her some tough questions. This is a CBS reporter. His audio is a little muffled at the beginning, so someone maybe didn't hand him a microphone in the room. But this CBS reporter, O'Keefe, pushes her on this question. And listen to how they just dodged this answer. Listen to her.
Formula. All of my colleagues' questions basically gotten to the same point, which is people want to know who in this building knew what when in the lead up to the formula shortage. You've said that that folks internally were on this since day one. You said that senior leadership in the administration was on it, but you also said that you don't have that time frame.
No, I said they were asking me specifically about the president, and I just don't have that time frame to share. What I can say is the White House began working on this from the first day of the recall, from day one of the recall, which was back in February.
Are you able to provide or commit to providing a timeline of who knew what when?
I mean, that's the same question that MJ just asked me, and I answered that question to her. Laid down what has happened since the recall, which was on February 17th. I've laid that down.
No, you didn't. You haven't answered the question. That's why this CBS reporter has to follow up on the previous reporter's question and keep asking the same question. When did you guys know about this? Like, when did you guys take action on this?
Right.
Well, I talked about...
go ahead.
Also, you know, do these decisions to shut down a baby formula factory happen in a vacuum? Because, okay, this formula can't be safely made, which means that we're going to shut it down, which means there'll be a shortage, which means what, right? Then what is this? What is the solution? I don't know.
Can I just
defend her a little bit and say she didn't start till April? So maybe she didn't know.
No, I know you always, so Natalie always tries to find the silver lining and always tries to find the good in people. That's Natalie. And I appreciate that in her. But she's been in the White House. She's been here for a long time. It's like, so she's been here. She knows the policies inside and out. That's what she told Ana Sada on her first day, that she's been fully briefed for like well over a year on this.
Okay.
So, okay, just right, because
I'm
you just started.
I'm just going to give her a little benefit of the doubt. It's like, that wasn't on my watch.
It doesn't even matter if it's on your watch, right? So you say, I don't have the answer for you today. I'll have it for you tomorrow.
Yeah,
I'll
she get could
you a
say
straight,
that.
I'll give you a straight answer.
But right? I would also accept... Ask Jen Psaki.
Right. Hey, call up MSNBC and ask Psaki, because that was a Psaki bomb. That was a Psaki bomb. When she was here, she didn't, you know, go ask Psaki. Now you're asking me? I wasn't here. I wasn't, you know. Anyway, but I think one of the big issues here with this baby food shortage that's not getting enough press is why this happened. It's not just that there was bacteria in this factory and it got shut down. It's that there is very little among these baby food companies, there's very little oversight. There's very little pressure at all from the United States government to do any sort of looking at these companies.
Yes.
Right? The amount of power that they have is intense. And so there's no sort of federal regulation that's really looking at these companies saying, hey, we need to make sure that these things are safe. We need to really clamp down on you. We need to have more oversight here. They give them a heads up before they're coming. And they had an opportunity to clean up their factory. Instead, what they did with all of the money, the profits, they were record profits, the money that they had, they did stock buybacks.
Oh,
so they just bought their own stock back, which is the great failure of this economy over the past few years. All of these corporations are making billions of dollars in profits and they're buying their own stock back and they've been getting handouts from the federal government. So we're giving them handouts from the Fed. And instead of actually reinvesting it in hiring people, research and development and helping people, making sure that their factory is safe, free of bacteria so that moms can get baby formula, they're buying their own stock back, therefore artificially inflating their stock price. So again, there's a whole bunch of reasons why the president of the United States could have stepped in on this at an earlier level, perhaps.
Yes.
And done something about it.
I mean, but the government has shown itself supremely uninterested in the well-being of babies through baby formula. I mean, if you look at the laws internationally, right, American baby formula has high fructose corn syrup and other types of like fillers like this, sweeteners. In Europe, that's not allowed. Mm-hmm. That, you know, a lot of moms ask for those things to change. You don't get that, right? So
right.
It doesn't seem like they, you know, it seems like they're only interested because babies were getting hurt. Well, it's an awful, awful story. And
so,
go ahead, please.
So Peter, the reporters kept asking her questions. She was not answering these questions. She just kept, they kept trying to get the answers and they kept not getting the answers. And so Peter Ducey jumped in as like the third or fourth question from a reporter on this, trying to get the same damn answer from her. Take a listen.
The front row, who decided after 6 or 8 weeks?
You said that. Hopefully the back row hears.
who is the person in the West Wing, yeah, who decided after 6 or 8 weeks that this baby formula shortage was finally something that somebody should tell the president about?
Look, again, I have to go back and talk to the president. I did not hear him take questions or answer any questions to all of you. And so this is, I want to do my due diligence, right, as his spokesperson to make sure that I have a conversation. What I can tell you is what we have been doing as an administration since the day one of a recall. And just let me just say this, because I want to make sure, since, you know, we have folks watching, that the actions that we're taking, that we took, actually made a difference here. DPA is allowing manufacturers to reliably plan for scaling production. In the case of Abbott and their suppliers, an increase of 25%, they can be manufacturing at 100% capacity. Likewise, Rickett plans to expand production by 40%. Operation Fly Formula has cut 3 to 4 week timelines for Nestle product to move Europe to 72-hour periods. Through FDA's enforcement discretion, we will get 27.5 million bottles from Bubs Australia. So these are all important actions, including the graphs that I just showed, how high production is higher than it was a year ago. So this is also important. We want to make sure that the American people, the American families know that we have been working on this 24/7. The president has done everything that he is able to do or has been able to do, and we'll continue to do more work because we understand there's more work to be done.
Another big
You know what, yeah, I'm curious about is are American babies now going to get this higher quality formula from Europe and then be and like then I don't want this,
and then obesity drops,
right?
Wouldn't that be amazing? Like, America's the fattest country in the world, right? Or it goes back and forth with Mexico.
Well, yeah, there are studies that show what you give children when they're in their formative years will set their palate towards a sweeter palate, right? And so putting these sweeteners inside baby food has an effect. And so it'll be interesting,
it's like
to
drinking
see.
Soda.
But we're still, you know, again, like, yes, there are people who absolutely need this and cannot nurse their babies and need something that they can rely on. This ain't it right now.
Final question on this is, I want to know how much Abbott and these other guys are getting now from the FDA, how much extra money to kind of like kickstart this, like, hey, push and manufacture as much as you can. They have $5 million in fines. They have violations because they didn't clean up their bacteria. And now the government is stepping in, like forcing them basically to ramp up production and going to help with all of this. I want to know if they're getting any money from the federal government. Like, they did wrong and now they're going to get money.
Yeah.
To produce what they should have already been making.
Right.
You know, we'll see. We'll see.
I don't know.
Let us know what you think about this in the chat below. You can weigh in. Please smash that like button.
And I'm so far removed. You know, it's been 4 years since I nursed my babies. So I do wonder what the mommy blogs are doing, if there is some kind of community where people are wet nursing other babies. Or we talk a lot about being disconnected from like a natural system, right? And so, of course, if you can nurse your baby, then you're exempt from this scandal at this point. But throughout history, there have been women who just couldn't nurse. That's still the case in a lot of places that don't have access to baby formula. And you use your community. You just nurse one another's babies if you got it. you use it, right? Mm-hmm. But we are very disconnected from that way of living. And I wonder if there are communities that are sort of re-embracing that. I would find that to be a beautiful silver lining if that's the case.
Indeed. All right, we've got a bunch of super chats I want to get to here before we move on. I see we got Mind of Jamal sent us a nice, really nice super chat, a $5 super chat. The Black Southerner, Mind of Jamal, says that you guys keep me informed and I'm able to do the same with my listeners. Thanks for calling out that thug Zelensky.
Bilbo Evans with a 10-pound super chat. Keep up your amazing content. Love and blessings from South Wales, UK. Thank you so much.
And Just Me Nicole, Canadian $5, says on yesterday's Canadian gun laws, you should talk with Runkle of the Bailey, Ian Runkle, LawTube Canadian lawyer, for details. He keeps on top of it in Canada. Thanks so much for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see as that moves forward in Canada. I'll definitely take that into consideration. Vice News. Mark, can you read that?
And we had one more just come in.
Oh, okay.
Yep, I got this. I can put this on screen. I figured I was working in the background to work on make this happen.
Oh, cool.
All right, so a $5 super chat from Mark Andrzak. Is it his name? Vice News has a great YouTube series called Russian Roulette that got started in 2014. Over 100 episodes, about 6 minutes each.
Okay.
Sweet. Shows about Ukraine. Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much, guys. Thank you, Bilbo Evans, with the keep up the amazing content. Thank you guys so much. Get in your super chats if you have them. We'd love to answer them here in between stories. All right, I've got a question for you. It's a question that I think has been plaguing a lot of us lately in the year 2022. It's not a question I really had trouble with for the first 44 years of my life, but lately in the year 2022, I've been wondering, what is a woman? What is a woman, actually?
All right.
Can you answer that for me?
Yes, but make sure you ask it in a respectful way.
I will ask it in a respectful way. That's the way I asked it just now. And I hope that there's maybe a documentary that could help me figure this out.
There is such a thing, and we're going to tell you about this controversial new documentary. It is called What is a Woman? Now, already you know this story is going to get uncomfortable, so buckle up. The documentary was made by The Daily Wire, and on the day it launched, which was yesterday, the site experienced an online attack that disrupted the site and kept many from watching it. So the attack was called a DDoD, or Distributed Denial of Service attack. It's when someone sets a bot to attack the server for information over and over and over again in rapid fire, clogging up the server and making it unable to handle any legitimate requests. Now, the Daily Wire says that this attack was a deliberate attempt to stop people from seeing this movie because it asks uncomfortable questions such as, how much does biology define gender? Should we allow minors to permanently alter their bodies with drugs that have not been shown to be safe? Is there a social contagion component to gender dysphoria? We've talked about these things on the show, but this continues to be a conversation in society that is not allowed. And I think it's important to ask these questions in a respectful way. But this shows that people don't want you to ask these questions, so they define your questions as disrespectful. Another question, is there a safe way to define woman that includes biology and identity? Now, I did watch it today. It's about 90 minutes long, and the host is named Matt Walsh. You may have seen him. He is popular on social media.
He's been viral on YouTube. Yes. Over, because he basically goes on. Was he on?
He was on Dr. Phil.
Dr. Phil taking on a trans activist.
Yeah. And so he does it in kind of he's antagonistic. So he walks around and asks people, what is a woman?
You think he's in, why is that antagonistic? Like when he was on Dr. Phil, he's literally asking straightforward questions. In my opinion, this is my opinion. He's asking straightforward questions that they then can't answer. And then they get frustrated with him. And he's like, well, I'm not the one. I'm just asking you a simple question. And they just won't answer it.
So many times I want to talk about, okay, let's just talk about what he says. So many times he asks gender rights activists what a woman is, and they continue to tell him it's either someone who says they're a woman is a woman, period, or and he asks at one point a social scientist, define woman without using the word woman, because so many people answer him saying a woman is someone who says they're a woman, right? And then he asks a gay man and he's like, well, I can't tell you what a woman is. You have to be a woman to know if you're a woman. And so therefore, by that definition, anyone who's not a woman could not and could not define woman. He tries to get to the heart of biology, but people who are gender rights activists refuse to reduce this to biology, which I understand. I want to say I myself would love an inclusive way to define gender that accounts for biology, right? And so that accounts for the fact that me, as a woman who gets my period and is able to have babies, has an experience that is a part of womanhood, but that piece of it seems to be want. People seem to want to remove that from the identity of womanhood, which means that how I identify myself is exclusionary, right? And so it makes me feel like if these pieces of me are an important part of my gender, then I am being hateful, right? And so I think that there are people who want to be very inclusive and let people in to sort of your gendered group and say, oh, you want to brush each other's hair? You want to wear this? You want to, you know, that's great. Come into my group. But then where does my biology bind me to people? What can I say about people who are other breeders, right? What can I say about myself, right? So there's this problematic part where you want to acknowledge the biology that makes you a woman while also being inclusive. I think that's where I struggle with it. Then there's this other piece of it, and I'm not very comfortable showing this documentary at this point just because, well, for so many reasons, and because we know that social media is not a safe place to have these discussions.
Well, first of all, if we show the documentary, it's probably going to get a copyright strike for us, so we can't do that. Secondly, it was attacked. And these big tech companies don't want this information out there. So if we show any clips or anything like that, they'll probably come after us. So, yeah, we can't do that.
But I think an important piece of this is what I've been raising the alarm bell on for a long time is that the pharmaceutical aspect of this is extremely upsetting, right? The pharmaceuticals stand to make a lot of money using procedures and drugs that are not proven to be safe for children or adults. In fact, some countries that offered these options are now reversing course in doing so for young children. So it is not hateful to ask, is it safe for children? And it's not productive to shut down these questions, right? So Daily Wire was able to stop the attack and the documentary is currently available to watch. The company says, though, that their premiere had more viewers than any stream in the history of its site. It is behind a paywall. But I think that there are some important takeaways from this documentary. He does not, I think he spends the first half of it kind of pushing people to give him a definition of woman. And he does it in sort of an antagonistic way, like, you can't say, well, then, you know, you don't know kind of way. And trying to push people to admit that biology has a purpose, and they won't do it. And it ends up being a bit snarky. But in the end of the documentary, he goes into the pharmaceuticals. He features a trans man who is biological female who has had 7 surgeries and is extremely unhealthy, and talking about how, you know, 7 to 10 years after these surgeries, your body is sort of fighting you all the time and you're dependent on these pharmaceuticals. And he's had many, many, many painful experiences because of this medical intervention. And he says, you know, by telling people these experiences that I'm in pain, right, that I'm on a drug that's not approved, that they did not warn me how hard this would be for my health. He's been like airlifted because of heart failures. And he's in his 40s, I think. And he says that for each child that transition, the pharmaceutical industry stands to make $1.3 million. Let me just double check my notes. He also says that for every surgery that they do, it's $70,000 to do these surgeries. $70,000 per surgery for a surgery that has a 67% complication rate, and that for each child that transitions, Big Pharma will make $1.3 million. So it's really important at this point to ask, are these drugs safe for children, or are we just experimenting at this point in the name of trying to be inclusive and supportive, right? Could there be sincere people who want to not ask these questions because you want to be inclusive, but then also care about the fact that people will make money on these experimental treatments for children and it will hurt them? And, you know, he does, I think, make a good point about how people are canceled for asking these questions because you are labeled hateful. And so those pieces alone, I think, are important. And like I said, extremely uncomfortable, because I want people to be able to identify or dress or be how they want. But at the same time, I'm just so uncomfortable with this, especially the movement now to remove parents from the decisions about these pharmaceuticals.
That's the most troubling to me. It's like, okay, so you're going to allow these kids to go and do this, something so harmful, potentially harmful.
Yeah.
To their body with these pharmaceuticals, and the government is basically saying, if you like, we're going to allow the kids to do it. Parents shouldn't have a say in it. They've made up the decision. They're 12 years old.
Yes,
they can decide for themselves. I mean, it's absolutely absurd.
Yes,
it's absurd. And this
and
is
people
where
are being deplatformed. Therapists are losing their licenses for saying, "I'm not going to support you taking these drugs or harming your body at this point, but I'm going to support you in who you are today." They're calling that conversion therapy. So if I were to say to you, I feel like I'm in the wrong gender, and you come to me and say, well, let's work on who you are today, and then we'll explore if that just doesn't work later on down the road, changing that. But saying to me, let's work on who you are today before we do anything with pharmaceuticals, that is being called conversion therapy, as in like converting gay people to straight, which is, that's not right.
Yeah. Didn't we get there? I mean, now they're co-opting this term, conversion therapy. So they're using, it's like the inverse,
because yes,
I mean, we know that conversion therapy doesn't work. It's horrible. The idea that if you're born gay, like ask any gay person, you know, that's born gay, you're not going to go through some like Christian camp in the, you know, in Minnesota somewhere to have the, what is it? You're not going to pray the gay away. Is that what they used to say?
I suppose. Like, yeah.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So now they've like co-opted this phrase to use here.
Yeah.
Because a lot of countries have now outlawed conversion therapy because we, you know, it's really, really dangerous. So,
right. So by calling this that, so by not letting a child take a pharmaceutical that is highly related to cancer, is not shown to be safe, and is experimental, or do these transition therapies, then you are trying to convert them to their birth gender, right?
Yeah.
So that's highly problematic language. It's something that, like I said, I feel extremely uncomfortable with this, and uncomfortable at the rate in which you are called hateful or transphobic for wanting to have a discussion about something that Big Pharma will benefit from us not talking about.
Yeah, again, so they're going to make so much money off of this. They already have made so much money off of this. They, you know, anytime there's an opportunity to make money from these vaccines, they're going to do it. And then you, I mean, just to me, that whole part of it, the documentary piece is very interesting, but then the denial of service attack, a DDoS attack.
Which is usually deliberate.
It's absolutely deliberate, right? So a coordinated big tech effort, who knows where it came from, to shut down the streaming of this movie.
Yes.
And to get this information out there.
Yes. I want to say, I don't think that this host, what is his name? Matt
Walsh.
Walsh. I don't think he's the best spokesperson for this conversation. But I do think that there are other people out there who have important books, like Abigail Schreier or Barry Weiss. Or there is a lot of there are people now who are just saying, fine about gender identity, but let's take a pause on the drugs, people.
Well, maybe even Bill Maher. See Bill Maher's last speak 2 weeks ago?
Sure. There were things about that I thought were a bit hateful, but I think that I think this is an important conversation. I think that it's time to not rely on pharmaceuticals. Helen Joyce is another one. But I also think it's interesting how and this has more entertainment value, right, than someone who's going to sit and read a book about it. And then maybe that makes it more threatening to people who don't want you to have this conversation. Like Abigail Schreier says in her book, she says that, you know, they don't want to have a conversation. They just want an open pharmaceutical cabinet. And so America likes that. Like, look at DopeSick. Look at our opioid epidemic. Like, this is like, let's have another one. This one around gender, right? So it's dangerous, and it's for us to say, wait a minute, just wait a minute. But I don't know, you know, like I said, there are some things inflammatory about this, and I don't know if this will further the conversation or not.
All right. Good.
I'm done.
You're done? All right.
Yeah.
All right. Let us know what you think about this in the chat. I think we have some super chats on this.
Someone asks, Art Sullivan, are you live now? Yes, we are.
We're live right now. We're live
right here.
And one way you can support us right now is by smashing that like button, because it pushes us out to a larger audience when we are live. But we have got some super chats we want to get to.
Yeah, we had a Richard Palmentier just had a $2 super chat with no message.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And then we had Nifak Adorare. $5 super chat. Why are these movies under a big paywall? 2,000 Mules also. It doesn't disseminate information. I see no left, non-right side thinker mind joining DW.
Yeah, Nifak. So that's right. I mean, so I guess this DW movie, What Is a Woman, was behind a paywall.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Is that you paid for it and watched it?
I joined. I didn't pay for that movie. I joined the...
Okay, but you had to pay to see it.
You did.
Well, I get it. I mean, look, I understand. I mean, here's the thing. Independent media, they've got a few employees. Like, I know that's what we do here on our show. Like, when you support our show, like, we've got a whole team here, right? And when you support us with a super chat or just, you know, even signing up to be a member of our website, it goes right back into the show. You know, like, we buy another camera or we make the show better somehow. We better, you know, get... to, you know, better research or whatever we do, but it goes into that. So I understand, like, in DW, Daily Wire sends that time, puts together a whole documentary. They're not CNN. They don't have hundreds of millions of dollars. And so they're an independent media operation. I think it's Ben Shapiro's company. I think he, with his partners. So I get it. I mean, they do. Hopefully, maybe eventually it'll be free and then people can see it more broadly. But I think at first it's just like going to a movie, you know, think about all the, you know, if you go to see the new Top Gun movie, you don't walk in there for free.
Yes.
And they've spent millions to put it together. So I understand you pay for creators, help creators out and throw them a bone. So I get that. I get that.
All right. And then Marcy on the books had a $5 super chat. I love you guys. Your guys' show. When I can grab it live, is it possible to add the replay on your channel instead of clips? Keep up the good work.
So we do have, again, if you are a channel member for free, right, just come over to redacted.inc. If you come over to redacted.inc, and David's been out, so I'm not sure where we have all of this stuff right now, but just go to our website. It's free. Go to redacted.inc. That's our website. Sign up for free. Okay. And then you can become a channel supporter where you, you're able to, for like the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support our channel. You can also do it yearly. There's a yearly plan as well. But then you get the free, I think, Philip, we have it there, right? We have the full replay of the show through that. It's tied to Rumble. We use Rumble's infrastructure.
Yeah. So you can also go over. Yep, you can also go to Rumble. I don't know if David posts the on the website, but you can always find the full live show on Rumble.
Okay.
We don't pull it down there.
Yeah, so go to redacted.inc/rumble. I'm sorry, it's rumble.com/redacted. That's where it is. Rumble.com/redacted is where you can see the full replay of the live show. So we have our own redacted channel on Rumble. You can go there and find it. But just YouTube, we don't, because it just futzes with the YouTube algorithm. It's just a little funky. All right, we got a lot more news to get to here on this Thursday.
We had a few more.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry, real quick, then we had Chet Chisholm, $5 Canadian. Gender dysphoria is often a result of unresolved childhood trauma. It functions as a form of dissociation. I'm not that person, so it didn't happen to me.
Well, the data shows that gender dysphoria happens early in childhood. It usually shows itself around the age of 4, mostly in boys. So this trend of girls in their mid-teens suddenly showing gender dysphoria does seem to show a component of social contagion. Even the doctor in this documentary who does these gender surgeries admits that there is an element now of social contagion. And so what happened, why it shows up in those children later in life, to be determined, right? But legitimate gender dysphoria is a real thing, and it has been since the dawn of humanity, but usually it shows up quite early.
All right.
Then the last one real quick before we move on, it was Alejandro Gomez had a $19 super chat. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, we've got
more good work to do.
Yes, we do. We've got a lot more stories to get to tonight. So we've got about 3 more stories to get to tonight. Some big stories. All right. Let's talk about what's going on with the Disinformation Governance Board. You may recall Nina Jankowicz, of course, was put in charge of the Disinformation Governance Board. And she is, of course, the Mary Poppins of disinformation, right? She was the one that would sing on TikTok about disinformation. Here she is here's a picture of her. You know her. You love her. She gave an interview on NPR just yesterday and talked about how, guess what? If she was allowed to do her job, mass shootings in the United States and many of those cases against violent extremism would be gone, basically. Basically saying that, hey, if you would have allowed us to do our job, the Disinformation Governance Board, if you wouldn't have spoke up and called out our hypocrisy, then all of those mass shootings that you're seeing in the United States right now, which we just saw another one, didn't we just see one like yesterday or today? I can't keep track of them. There was one at a hospital. Then there was, you know, of course, at the school in Texas. And then another one in New York, in Buffalo, and on and on and on. She says, if you would have had the Disinformation Governance Board in place, then we wouldn't have had this. So here's what her quote was in this. She did an interview with NPR on Fresh Air, and I'm going to read this. She says, you know, we're seeing continued mass shootings here in the United States, and in many of those cases, violent extremism is begotten by things people see on the internet. She does sound like she wants to be Mary Poppins. Who talks like that, by the way? Begotten. Violent extremism is begotten by things people see on the internet. So that's the sort of thing that we would be looking to address, she says. Then she says, she alleged that the work of the board was not to determine what was true or false, but to equip Americans with information that would keep them safe. And then she says, the idea was to bring me in as an expert and work with the folks in the department, making sure that they had access to best practices, helping them put good information out there, and frankly, making sure Americans were equipped with information that kept them safe and secure, she said. So, Nina Jankowicz, who had to step down after it was revealed her own disinformation about Hunter Biden laptop, Russiagate, attacking independent journalists like the Gray Zone and Max Blumenthal, and the list is endless, actually. It's actually pretty laughable. And now she wants to lecture us about mass shootings, and that if she were able to do her job with disinformation, we wouldn't have them. We wouldn't have mass shootings. We wouldn't have this, because the Disinformation Governance Board would have nipped this radicalization in the bud.
I can't play that out, especially when you...
You shouldn't be able to play it out because it's insane.
Right.
I mean, I think about...
Yes, and insanity, right, is something. I mean, you're not right in the head if you've decided to go and mass murder many people
yes.
with a weapon. So that is not going to change that. I was trying to play it out in my head, having read the manifesto of the Buffalo shooter 2 weeks ago. I know we're like 15 mass shootings since Buffalo, right?
Right, but we're like, Buffalo? That was so like last week.
If you recall, this radicalized white guy who thought that white people were being threatened in the minority. And, you know, so what he was talking about was all kinds of statistics showing that soon white people will be in the minority and it's a problem. There was nothing in anything that he shared in his manifesto that said, therefore, we must exterminate. You know, that was his solution to a demography. So she would have what? Like kept him from demographic research?
No, how about the federal agent who was talking with him for like, maybe that would have stopped it. You know, maybe there were other ways of actually stopping this. I'm just going to throw that out there. But
Of course. I mean, there's like recognizing people who are violent and doing something about it before, mm-hmm. you know, that's law enforcement. That's not, has nothing to do with radicalization or, I don't know. It's an insulting thing to say. Plus, you know, I think there were three mass shootings yesterday alone or three shootings, and there was no common thread of like all of these people think they will accomplish this, right?
All of these people were reading websites that radicalized them. No, it had nothing to do with it. And according to Jankiewicz and according to the reclaim.net, which thank you for publishing this piece, Americans, especially conservatives, misinterpreted the role of the board, saying that it got totally taken out of context. Because, you know, the department didn't provide a ton of information at the beginning. Folks created their own narrative, a scary narrative. Oh, so I'm sorry that, the disinformation board was supposed to frame the narrative for us. That's what you're telling us. Because you didn't provide the narrative, we created our own based on your past history of spreading and being a purveyor of disinformation.
I mean, this just reeks of youth, right? Thinking that we could have otherwise given people a way to think about this that made them comfortable, you know? It sounds like something I might have said in my early 30s. Like, oh, we can make everybody feel great about letting them know what to think. It's going to be great. We just didn't do it, but we could have.
I mean, meanwhile, you know, she was paid, don't put this on the screen, but she was paid $180,000 for her role before. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that, you know, putting together, like at the Institute for Statecraft, putting these things together to funnel information out to Western journalists, getting paid an amount of money to paint a narrative. She's literally telling us right there in that article, in her quote, I'm sorry, in right when she was on NPR, that because of your narrative, that's why we weren't able to do what we were able to do. Addressing disinformation more broadly really isn't about labeling or censoring individual facts, which is what the narrative about the board was, you know. I've spent a lot of my career talking about how we can't just play what I call whack-a-troll to get out of disinformation crisis. So we're in a disinformation crisis.
No, we got to get to the heart of it, right? Get our information in front of the disinformation. Our disinformation first.
Yeah, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Right. And it also, right, it doesn't account for the fact that that board exists. It persists without her.
Yeah, great point. So Michael Chertoff, former head of DHS, is now going to be taking over this role. And as Larry Johnson, we did an interview with him earlier this week, he talked about he's arguably way worse because he's competent and he knows how this deep state actually works. He worked at the DHS. He's a guy who literally... oversaw torture. Like, he's a guy who condoned this. So again, that's the guy who's now running the DHS. That's the guy who's now running the new disinformation board, not Nina Jankiewicz.
In fact, the most recent news about the Tulsa shooting of the hospital in Tulsa, right, is that that person was aiming at the doctor who had not properly treated his pain. So he was someone in pain and was targeting specifically a doctor. So that's not disinformation. Like, that's all kinds of wrong inside that one person. So nothing on the internet would have convinced him that he wasn't in pain, right? There are a lot of, sure, there are plenty of other things that maybe could have been done to prevent this, but that had nothing to do with internet disinformation, if that is in fact the motive as alleged.
That's right. Well, we've got more news to get to, but first I want to tell you about our friends over at Moomoo. You've opened an account right now at Moomoo. If you go to our website, you will get 5 free stocks just for opening an account. And the best part is, too, right now they're also giving away a bonus stock of Lucid. That's right. Just for opening an account right now, just for a few more weeks. 5 free stocks. And what I love about them is they have all sorts of additional bells and whistles that you will not find on other exchanges, other platforms. And what's great about Moomoo is that it actually teaches you how to trade. So if you want to put a little bit of money into the market, investing in companies that you believe in or crypto, you can do all of that using Moomoo. And the best part is when you open your account, you're going to get these free stocks. So you're starting out with extra money. And even if you don't do anything with this account, of, you know, you open it, you get your free stocks and you let it sit, you let it grow. Great. And then you maybe a year from now want to add some extra money, you want to start doing some additional trading, go for it. Buying some crypto, learning. They've got a whole bunch of great learning tools in there as well inside of the platform. So you can absolutely go in, and I want to pull this other thing up here. If you want to take camera back to me here real quick while I pull this other thing up, because this is what they're giving away right now. Get one free share. Sorry, my computer's acting a little funky here. There. I guess we could, that's about as good as it's going to get right now. But take a look at this. You get one free share of LCID, their stock, right now, an additional share. Once you open up your account, make a $100 deposit. So go over and check them out right now. And to our website, that's moomoo.com/redacted. Moomoo.com/redacted. That's how you're going to get your free stocks right now. Our thanks to Moomoo for supporting independent journalism and supporting what we do here on this show.
I think I teased that we were going to talk about Fauci.
We are.
But
we didn't have room for
that. We didn't even have room for that. Okay. We didn't have room. I got
for
confused about what we're going to do.
It's hot as balls in here tonight, isn't
we're gonna
it?
We're going to have to.
So take off.
We're going to have to end the stream, redo all the graphics, and come back do the Fauci one. That's what we'll have to do.
All right. I mean, that's what we got to do.
That's not really what we're going
to
do.
No. But we are going to head north of the border now. We're going to head up to our favorite dictator with good hair. Justin Trudeau. So we've been following, of course, the slippage of Justin Trudeau over the past number of months, and really burst onto the scene with some major draconian moves against his own people that really got us really up in arms, and moving towards an authoritarian government in Canada. It's no secret that Justin Trudeau's government attempting to curtail personal freedoms and censor speech. And he doesn't like when you speak your mind or you speak out against the government. Well, we got word overnight that, yes, in fact, Trudeau's internet bill, C-11, the Online Streaming Act, the head of Canada's Broadcasting and Telecommunications Regulator, again confirming that these far-reaching regulations will, in fact, apply to user-generated content.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is not good. That means... That means
your trucker convoy was the last of those kind of parties, because you won't be able to disseminate if you want to do that again.
Right. Among other things. But this is authoritarian, where you can tell if, you know, again, we saw him take the piss out of independent media.
Yes.
You have, you know, be like registered as a news organization. It's basically like state controlled media.
Yes.
So he told Rebel News, of course, we play that clip a lot, but he took on Rebel News and he said, "You are not a news organization and I'm not going to dignify by calling you a news organization." And then what is a news organization, according to you, Justin Trudeau, falls in lockstep with what the government of Canada actually wants? or you're, you know, you, okay, so the CBC is actually supporting?
Actually, there was a study recently that shows what a news organization is that something like 80% of journalists are from upwardly mobile, wealthy, elite families, right? Mm-hmm. So who does he want? Like, disseminating information is not anyone scrappy and of the people.
No, so if you go to like cbc.ca, right? This is their this is a news organization in Canada, of course, that is like, you know, sanctioned by the Canadian government to put out propaganda. And I know journalists who are Canadian, who've been covering the Ukrainian conflict, who are stunned at how the Canadian government and the Canadian journalism community treats some of its own journalists who are independent and free of these state-run medias. Literally are in favor of promoting violence against journalists. And, you know, you have certain journalists who are, in fact, on Ukrainian lists to be removed from life, gone after by the Ukrainian government. And that's okay, according to the CBC. We can out those people.
I'm looking at this story about Justin Bieber, who can't buy a Ferrari. Yeah, that's good journalism, too.
That's top fantastic journalism.
Yes.
And so Justin Trudeau, of course, told us just a few weeks ago about how governments, he was noticing this slippage, right? And we've seen it coming. And we need to stand strong with democratic values around the world. That's why we need to stand with Ukraine. I'm wearing my little Ukraine pin. And this is, we've seen this coming in democracies. It's starting to slip. Our freedoms are starting to slip. Yet, it also helps if you take them away from people. Here was Justin Trudeau just a few weeks ago. Listen.
We've come to a moment that, quite frankly, we've seen coming over the past years. And we've talked about it in the news, not just about Ukraine, but about democracies around the world, that we see a bit of a slippage in our democracies. Countries turning towards slightly more authoritarian leaders. Countries allowing increasing misinformation and disinformation to be shared on social media, turning people against the values and the principles of democracies that are so strong.
Because it's not the democracy, surely.
Slippage over the years, unfortunately, emboldened Putin.
Oh, it emboldened Putin.
Made him think that he could get away with this.
Oh.
That he could get away with it in Ukraine.
Oh, it was Putin that's getting away with it. I see. I mean, he says that with a straight face. He literally says that with a straight face.
Yeah.
That democracies around the world are, we've seen this coming. We've seen some slippage. And you know what? We've got to stand strong for our Western values, our democratic values. We've got to stand for freedom. We've got to make sure that we stand for human rights.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So how do you support your journalists right now who are literally on attack lists by the Ukrainian government? Your own Canadian journalists covering the truth in Ukraine, and you're standing with tyranny over freedom and democracy. Like, that's what you're standing for.
And trying to pass a bill, giving yourself the power to decide what independent voices will be allowed.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you're going to pick what voices that get to register with the government.
Yeah.
So come to the government office and let us know what your viewpoints are. How do you plan to tell the story of Canada? How do you plan? What are your values?
Sometimes I feel like it's just a graphic novel. It's like, you just did something kind of evil. Maybe you should wait a few bars before you do something
else. A few frames?
Yeah, evil. Uh-huh. Like, just wait it out, Petey the Cat. Like, hang on a bit, you know? Like, we got to do something else that takes freedom then.
I don't know. I'm just so disillusioned with these leaders and to hear these guys who, you know, it's okay for them to funnel another, Canada's funneled $1 billion to Ukraine, right?
Yes.
And you're funneling money to a corrupt government. Ukraine is listed as the most corrupt government in Europe, right? So you're funneling billions to a corrupt government, lecturing us about democratic values and freedom, taking away freedoms in your own country. You have journalists who are from Canada covering the corruption in Ukraine, and they're on targeted lists to be taken out by the Ukrainian government, and you don't say a damn thing or protect them, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're fine with that.
I don't know. All right, one last power grab.
Well, it sounds to me like you're guilty of slippage, Clayton.
I must have a lot of slippage.
What did he do?
I'm guilty of slippage.
What's that? He's guilty of slippage because he's not going along with the official narrative. Oh. There's only one term for that, and that's Trudeau's slippage.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, let's talk about the power grab. There's one more big power grab to talk about, and that's Dr. Fauci.
Yeah. Okay. So Dr. Fauci was asked about the mask mandate because the Justice Department still is trying to litigate the CDC mask mandate, which was taken away from them recently. You may recall that a judge has ruled that the Biden administration no longer has the right to enforce mask mandates on public transportation. And so we saw those videos of people flinging their masks off like bra burning, right? Well, Dr. Fauci is saying that he intends or that he does think that the Biden administration should continue to fight for the mask mandate, not necessarily for medical reasons, but for power reasons. He's saying that the administration needs to have the power to make these choices, even if a judge does not.
That's right. So he was on Fox News and he made these comments about power. And I can't actually believe he said these things out loud. He actually physically said these words out loud, and he actually admits about masks that these are it's about a power grab. Really, it's not about science. It's not about health. That it's really about the efforts of the administration's ability to take power. See if you hear it, too. Take a listen.
So, Doctor, at the same time the Justice Department is pushing an appeals court to intervene on this ruling that lifts mask mandates and public transportation, mass transit, that sort of thing. What do you think of that?
Wait, are you asking me what I think about the Justice Department appealing this court decision about pulling back?
Exactly.
You know, one of the issues, Neil, that I have articulated in the past and I will in the future, it's less about mandates on the plane than it is about who has the right and the authority and the capability of making public health decisions. And I believe that the Department of Justice is operating on the principle that decisions that are public health decisions belong with the public health agency, in this case, the CDC. So it's more of a matter of principle of where the authority lies than it is about whether or not there's going to be a mandate on a plane or not.
But do you personally, Doctor, I mean, when you travel and when you go around, do you prefer wearing a mask yourself? I know you've avoided public venues with large gatherings. I think the White House Correspondents' Dinner comes to mind. Do you still have those reservations, even now?
You know, I do. I mean, the CDC continues to recommend that when people fly, that they wear masks. Now, the mandate has been pulled back on the decision of the court, but that does not change the recommendation of the CDC, Neil, or my own personal preference. When I travel on the plane, given my evaluation of my personal risk as a person of my age, with or without underlying conditions, that I feel that I would be much more comfortable for my safety and even for the safety of others to wear a mask. But that's a recommendation. That's not a mandate.
All right, so it wasn't your way of saying you didn't want to be hounded by people who know you, right? I mean, you just wanted to keep that on for your safety. Just saying. I'm just throwing
yes,
that out there.
It certainly is.
Right?
Right, right.
So the court has already ruled that the Biden administration does not have this power. And so what Fauci is advocating is retrieving that power, not for the sake of the mask at all, really. He seems quite flippant about the idea of wearing a mask. Like, well, I'm an old dude. Feel like I should.
Well, and also he's saying, like, I'm wearing it for you. Like, okay, we've talked about that here on the show. I'm going to wear it for you. If you want to wear it for yourself, that's great. But you wearing it for me is not going to help me. Right?
Yes.
We've covered that extensively here on the show. Well, we showed you the study.
It's not for us to cover.
Well, it is for us to cover. We covered it.
But it's not for us to declare, yes. But the science does show that it's only really protecting yourself, right? Right.
So the RNC sent out this tweet that said, Biden is lifting COVID restrictions for illegal immigrants flooding into the country, but not for Americans on airplanes. Zeke Miller, AP source, CDC to extend travel mask mandate for 2 weeks to monitor uptick in COVID-19 cases. So, you know, Rand Paul also had a tweet about this as well, specifically on the mask mandates, and says, no surprise, Biden continues to mandate wearing ineffective masks on planes. Time to vote out these petty tyrants. That's Rand Paul.
Yes. I mean, this was a position that, you know, the Republican Party using this as... That was, again, but they're politicizing it, right?
They are politicizing it?
Both sides are. Now, the Biden administration is saying we just need it for our own control. Republicans are saying, okay, but, you know, you're torturing people and not immigrants. Like, that's sort of a silly argument. Those two things are not necessarily related.
Let us know what you think about this in the chat below. And do you think it's about power or do you think it's about health? Let us know. Do you agree with Dr. Fauci? Did he really let the cat out of the bag on this? It certainly caught our ears. Let us know in the chat below.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. Do we have any super chats about the last two stories that we missed? I noticed one from, I'm just going to read this one myself. Your Imperial Majesty said that her VPN was in Canada and kept kicking us off the show. So it seems already that Canadian media does not ordain redacted.
Does not like our show.
So, like, we're right there with the Rebel News, huh? So we got to apply. Maybe you have to apply for your Canadian journalism badge or whatever.
Maybe.
Whatever they give you.
Get a press thing to put in our hat. On my floral shirt. Yeah. All right.
Richard Paul.
And that was it. That was all for the Super Chats.
Oh, okay. I see one from Richard Paul. Maybe you already read that one. I'm also subscribed to redacted.inc. Enjoy the content. Keep up the good work. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
And Beer and Flies sent another Transformer-looking hippo, which was awesome. We had one just like it. I don't have the description, though, in the chat that normally comes up. But thank you so much. I love the hippo-related emojis. Thank you so much for your super chats.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Art. Thank you, Jay Thomas, Luce Robinson. Please make sure you're subscribed to the channel. We'll have great content for you this weekend. I've got a great interview coming out this weekend. So please be sure to subscribe to the channel. You don't want to miss that interview. We're going to pull the wool back on propaganda on how it's actually created and pushed out by your government.
And Mark wants to know, $2 super chat, what movie was the comfortable shirt from? Yeah. It's from Mr. Mom. That's which, right. That movie, you guys, holds up 5,000%.
Yes. So Michael Keaton, what was the scene? He's
when she's like, oh, do you want to talk about this shirt? And he's like, it's a comfortable shirt. They're having an argument. And that because argument is so he's
sort
spot
of
on.
Let him, he's sort of let himself go, and he's just like full beard, and she's like,
yeah, the kids are a mess, Jack. The house is a mess, Jack. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great movie, you guys. It's one of my favorites. It's always on my iPad for planes.
Yeah, it's a great
movie. I'm adding that one to my list for the ones that I've watched with my daughter. We've watched Money Pit, but she hasn't seen Mr. Mom.
My kids have seen it.
Yeah, Money. Oh, Mr. Mom. Our kids have seen it a bunch of times. They love it.
Yeah.
Money Pit is another great one we should watch with the kids.
The kids would like that one.
I remember. I haven't seen that in years. Oh, yeah, that's... since I was a little kid. That and
yep. And they're probably too young for The Jerk, but my daughter really liked that one too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
With Steve Martin.
Yeah.
There's Splash. When they have this fight, this marital fight, and she's kind of snipping at him, and then he goes, all right, let's get into it. Like, we're going to have a fight. And Clayton does that all the time when I start to get bitchy.
Yeah.
Like, all right.
So the key is there, she said, all the time. Yes, I do.
If I start to get bitchy, which is rare.
If on a highly rare occasion that happens. Yeah.
All right. We remind you that we don't do a live show on Friday, so this wraps up our week. We will have content through the week. Please subscribe to the newsletter. It's morninginvest.com. Lots of fun stuff in there. For instance, today, the lion with bangs gave me quite pleasure to see a lion with bangs. That's too silly.
Morninginvest.com. It's totally free newsletter. Go and grab it. I should say, yeah, we're working on the rebranding of that. We took a poll and overwhelmingly you said we should change the name of it. We are working on that, but David's been out, so I don't know where we are in that process right now. But the newsletter will be changing. It'll be changing to Redacted, but right now it's still Morning Invest. So go grab it. You can still grab it, and nothing will change if you sign up. You'll still get it once we change the branding. So it's morninginvest.com is the place to go. All right, everyone. Much love. We'll see you back
here
again.
Thanks for being here this week. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.